So I've come just a few days ago from co-teaching a 7-day retreat on metta. And I've been very inspired by that retreat, which I've taught or been part of actually for almost 25 years. But still, this was particularly inspiring for me on a lot of levels. One of the reasons is that when I teach, as some of you know, I like to practice a lot. So I was both teaching, but then doing my own practice sessions, about 5 or 6 sessions a day. So probably 4 or 5 hours a day of formal practice with metta. And my practice that I do now for metta is called radiating metta, something that I'll teach next week, a different technique than I gave instructions for. And it really led me to reflect further on a really key theme, which I want to explore tonight, which is the connection in our practice of wisdom and clear seeing on the one hand, with developing the kind heart of loving kindness and compassion and joy on the other. What I'll suggest is that very, very commonly, these are separated, even in the teachings, even in the fundamental teachings. It seems that the essence of the practice, the essence of awakening, is to develop mindfulness, clarity, and wisdom. Link this with one's ethical behavior, and that it's not so clear what the role is of the development of the kind heart, what the development is, even we might say, of love. And what I want to suggest is that the development of kindness, friendliness, compassion, love is central to awakening, and not always very clearly explored or practiced in the way that meditation has developed in the West. So I'm going to be a little bit provocative tonight. Metta, as many of you know, is a word which, in its etymology, has connotations of friendliness, of warmth, of goodwill. Loving kindness is the usual translation, a little awkward in my mind, mostly because it's not a normal English word. But the essence of metta is connoted by words like friendliness, goodwill, warmth, kindness, perhaps by love, not a straight equation, but close. My colleague at Spirit Rock, Anushka Fernanda Pola, speaks of metta as unstoppable friendliness. And yet we can really wonder whether there's a connection between wisdom and metta, and what the place is of metta in our practice. It's interesting. Think of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the compendium of trainings. Metta does not appear. The heart practices do not appear in any obvious way in the Noble Eightfold Path. That's interesting, isn't it? Where does it appear? In the later work that culminated in the Visuddhimagga, a 5th-century text, metta is placed under a concentration practice. is distinguished from insight practice in that text, and is taken to be one of the 40 modes of developing concentration. In other words, strictly speaking, it's most useful for the path of awakening because it helps develop concentration. And in fact, the main way that metta is practiced in the West comes out of that text. That's where the phrases come from. Practice with repetition of phrases comes from the Visuddhimagga. It doesn't come from the teachings of the Buddha. Probably some of you, how many people knew that? Yeah, it would come from my teachings. I mentioned that a lot. It's interesting. And so to some extent, in the way that metta has been taught in the West, it's seen as important and helpful and valuable, but somewhat marginal. Most of our retreats where we practice mindfulness, we do mindfulness all day long, and maybe we have one session bringing in metta. That's interesting, isn't it? You know, we don't really highlight. And then we have, you know, 1 week metta retreats like I taught, but we can ask that question, where is the integration of clear seeing and wisdom and love? Are they separate parts of our being? Do they ever get integrated? It's an interesting question. Is the essence of awakening about wisdom and clear seeing? Is the essence of awakening not really about love? I think I'm deliberately asking somewhat provocative questions, right? Because what I'm going to suggest is that bringing together wisdom and metta, wisdom, we might say, and kindness and love, is actually very, very important. Some teachers express that, for example, Ram Dass, the great teacher who died a few years ago, he speaks about loving awareness, which brings together the quality of metta and awareness. And in, for example, in Mahayana tradition, there's a little more explicit connection. It's said that the essence of our practice is insight into emptiness, which is an aspect of wisdom, and compassion. It brings together wisdom and compassion. And then we often say, I think this may come more out of Mahayana, that the core of the tradition is like a bird with two wings. One wing is wisdom and one wing is compassion. So how do we bring those together? In the teachings of the Buddha, there are many indications that our deeper nature, what's sometimes called our Buddha nature, includes metta, or kindness. There are passages where this is brought out, even if it isn't in the central teachings like the Noble Eightfold Path, or even the Seven Factors of Awakening doesn't clearly involve metta or heart practices. It's said that there is what's called a brightly shining quality of mind and heart that is part of our deep being that everyone has, even if it gets covered over. That there's something that's linked in the text with metta, this brightly shining quality of our being is linked with metta. In other passages, this is talked about as the radiance of our being. It's said that we can be liberated by metta, and then when this occurs, the mind and heart shine and glow like the radiance of the moon. Again, these are texts, not always brought, these themes are not always brought out in the central teachings, but they're there. A Tibetan teacher named Garchen Rinpoche says this, and he uses the English word love. Love is the only cause of happiness. Its nature is all pervasive like space. Love is the sunlight of the mind and heart. It seems that the Buddha, when the Buddha taught metta, taught something like what Garchen Rinpoche is pointing to. Something like a quality of a radiation of the heart through space. The Buddha didn't teach with phrases. He seemed to teach with what could be called a form of metta that we call radiating metta, where the heart energy is strong and it naturally radiates out in all directions, filling up the entirety of space, the entirety of consciousness. We can know this from some of the text. You know, in the Metta Sutta, the main discourse on metta, this is what the Buddha said. Some of you, many of you know this well. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. The Buddha suggested at other times that this is kind of where one ends up when there's awakening. He said that his natural place, we might say, of where he hung out was in metta, this radiating metta. He said, I abide in metta when he's just walking somewhere, having that energy of radiating metta. Another text, one abides, having suffused with a mind and heart of metta, one direction of the world, likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, and so above, below, around, and everywhere, and to all as to oneself. One abides suffusing the entire universe with metta, with a mind and heart grown great, lofty, boundless, free from enmity and ill will. That suggests an awakened mind and heart, freed from reactivity. And I'll be teaching this radiating metta next week in the first period, and we'll explore metta further. And so one can develop this metta that radiates out. This was the practice I was doing for the week in the retreat, you know, 4 or 5 hours a day. It's my core practice. And it really connects a kind of vast awareness with the energy of metta. In my advanced retreat, which some of you have done, where I talk about non-dual awareness, one of the entryways to this is radiating metta. So this awakened awareness can be infused with metta. And what I have found from different teachers is that's not always there. Often awareness is spoken about more without that spirit of metta, without that spirit of energy, with the energy of friendliness. So a few words about practicing metta. You know, what I'm pointing to is where it can lead towards an integration of wisdom and the kind heart. And I think we can also develop that in different ways. But it's really saying, let's make connections between these different parts of our practice, which otherwise can be kept separate. And this is a lifetime of work. Because metta is not easy. You know, as I sometimes like to say, our metta practice is inclining us towards kindness. We're intending through the phrases or through the radiating metta to bring about a greater sense of warmth. But we can't simply produce it. Working with the phrases, which even though it's not the teaching of the Buddha, I think is a very legitimate way of practicing. And it was my main way of practicing for 30 years. Right? And so it can be very, very helpful. But it's important to see that it inclines us through the phrases, which are tend to be evocative of kindness. It points us in that direction, but it doesn't produce the metta. So we say the phrases, and then sometimes there's warmth, sometimes there's not, sometimes we encounter what gets in the way of metta. You know, at the metta retreat, people have a lot of experiences that we call purification experiences, where the judgmental mind comes up, people's blockages come up, all sorts of things come up. People have nightmares in their dreams of their own stuff. It's a more volatile retreat in many ways than mindfulness retreats, because more things can be evoked. And yet developing metta is not easy, just like developing mindfulness is not always easy. We run into the issues of the same ones that we find in our practice generally. We get distracted sometimes. We have repetitive thoughts. We have our top 10 list of distractions. We have uneven energy. We get sleepy sometimes. The energy isn't always strong. Sometimes the heart feels blocked. We can't really get there. And sometimes we find that. And then sometimes difficult states come up, like I was mentioning, the judgmental mind or sadness, material we haven't gone through, grief sometimes. Reactivity, different states come up. And so a big part of metta practice is working with all of this, developing more concentration, learning to really to lead with our hearts as much as possible, working with sleepiness, finding ways to bring this into daily life, working with the material that comes up. And what I want to encourage is both for the next week, formal practice of metta. And if you feel energized and inspired, find ways to bring it into daily life. Maybe one or two or three ways that you do so in a regular way. It could be doing metta while driving. I do metta with telemarketers. Another way of practicing is bringing the spirit of metta into your conversations. I think I probably have mentioned over the last weeks that I have a phrase which really guides me in gatherings with people, in teaching. It's, may I be led by kindness, empathy, and being present. Bringing that intention into interactions with people. That can be a way of bringing metta in. A beautiful daily life practice that I think I co-evolved with one of my students. Very simple. She had a young child And we were finding ways to have the practice going, and especially have the spirit of metta. And her practice became asking continually, what's the kind thing to do? You could ask, what happens if you ask that 10 times during the day or 5 times during the day? What's the kind thing to do right now? I'm not sure what to do, or I have a conflict or difficulty or a difficult conversation coming up. What's the kind thing to do? And just to say something which I think most of us know, that metta or kindness isn't about being nicey nice or being a pushover, that we can bring in metta to difficult circumstances, where we bring the spirit of metta into setting boundaries, saying no, saying that wasn't okay. We can do so with the spirit of metta. At the retreats we practice with metta with the so-called difficult person. And I like to think about a quality of metta, which the Buddha didn't exactly talk about, that I call tough metta, kind of like tough love, right? That's part of metta. It's not about nicey nice or spiritual bypassing or being a pushover, but we really develop the foundations of that more challenging dimension of metta by first practicing where it's easiest. That's how we practice with metta. Get it going, really like any training, get it going where it flows the easiest, and then bring it into the harder situations. So what I'm encouraging in the next week is bring some metta into your formal practice, at least 10 minutes a day, and then see if you can bring it in other ways into daily life. I think I've mentioned that from time to time that I'm, as many of you know, I'm a lap swimmer. I do lap swimming when I'm home about 5 times a week. It's my main form of exercise. And when I do lap swimming, I do metta the whole time. I think I've shared that a few times. Typically one being per lap. Right? One being per lap. And I do 8 laps at a time, 8 different beings. I stop and rest and then do another 8 beings. And then I come back to the first set of 8 and then the second set of 8. And typically I do about 6 sets of 8 laps, along with some kicking and so forth. So anyway, but you can do metta with exercise. You can do it at different times. The radiating metta particularly, which we'll do next time, can be brought into taking a walk. You can bring metta to trees and bushes and flowers. Very, very sweet. You can bring metta to other beings. And so in the text, I think it seems pretty clear that as we do metta, it's not just about developing the kind heart, but there's also a sense of wisdom that develops. And again, we don't always see this very clearly in the core teachings, but it's there maybe in the margins of the text. It's there in some points. For example, the Buddha once met with 3 monks. Who were living together. The senior monk was called Anuruddha, and so they called themselves the Anuruddhas. And the Buddha said, "How is it, you Anuruddhas, that you are all living so harmoniously on friendly terms with each other, regarding each other with the eye of affection?" Anuruddha, the lead senior monk, he said, "We've been developing metta in terms of our actions of body, speech, and mind. And this has led to a sense of there being no boundary between us." He said, "We have diverse bodies, but we only have one mind and heart. Our mind and hearts are connected." So the metta can really lead to that sense of interconnection, lack of a separate self, and so forth. And in some of the texts also, there's the possibility of liberation through metta. Liberation through metta, or liberation through the other heart practices. So they get, the metta gets integrated with wisdom, that the metta can lead to insight, as I was just suggesting, into not self, one of the three fundamental areas. It can lead to insight into impermanence. Sometimes the metta is there, sometimes it's not there. It can lead into an insight into dukkha, or reactivity. We can see how metta, when it's fully developed, is non-reactivity. And we work through reactivity in practicing with metta. So let me invite you to, if you wish, to cultivate metta in the next week, both in formal practice, 10 minutes a day or more, and then in finding ways to bring it into daily life. And see also if you can, as the metta develops, whether it can be integrated with mindfulness, much as in that phrase from Sylvia, may I meet this moment fully, may I meet it as a friend. Can you have your mindfulness have a quality of warmth? Can you have your awareness infused with kindness? Can you have that sense of the metta and the clear seeing being more and more one, which is really about integrating. All of this is about integrating, we might say, our minds, our hearts, our bodies, which so often in Western culture are split apart, right? I didn't even mention that. But we're going against that longstanding social conditioning that would have the mind be separate from the emotions, mind be separate from the heart, and mind be separate from the body. We're going against that. So this is all pointing towards our own wholeness, our own integration, a lack of a split. We've all had the social conditioning to be split beings. And what I'm suggesting, with an explicit attention to metta and the connection of metta with wisdom and mindfulness, this is one way of moving towards that wholeness, that integration, working through the splits which have been there in a way for hundreds, if not thousands of years in Western culture. Let me finish with going back to the Metta Sutta. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downward to the depths, outwards and unbounded. Freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. And at the end of the Metta Sutta, the Buddha speaks, really, I think, of the fulfillment of the practice. He speaks of the pure-hearted one who has clarity of vision. The two are connected in those last lines of the Metta Sutta. The pure-hearted one who has clarity of vision. That's what we're looking for. That's what we're practicing for. To be a pure-hearted one with clarity of vision. Anyone want to sign up for that? Okay, that's what we're practicing for, to be a pure-hearted with clarity of vision, and it's a practice. So let me stop there and just invite us maybe to have 1 or 2 minutes of quiet reflection, see what maybe resonated with you. Maybe there's a question that arises of clarification or a sharing. Let's just take a minute or two right now. So that's my invitation to not have metta be as marginal as it sometimes is, even in retreats, sort of on the edges, but have it be more integral to our practice. Let me invite any reflections, questions, sharing. Please, Deborah.
I just want to say thank you for this practice. Can you hear me?
A little louder would be better. Yeah.
I just want to say thank you for this talk and for these, not only the good integration of insight and wisdom with loving kindness heart, but the way you put it together and the languaging that you used, it was really helpful. And I took a lot of notes, which will go up on the cupboard.
Yeah, thanks, Deborah. Yeah, it's something which, this is actually the first time this evening that I've given this talk. It developed out of the retreat. And I've had thoughts like this over the years, but I haven't organized them together like I did this evening. And so it really is not, some old standing set of ideas, but it's really an exploration. And like I say, I think it is, maybe even a call to my colleagues. Let's integrate these more. They tend to be split. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Deborah. Patty, please.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I want to encourage you to give the talk again and again, Donald. It was wonderful. But I want to share, for me, to kick, metta's been my primary practice for over a year now. But what gets it into high gear is my gratitude practice. I begin with gratitude, and then I realize all of the beings and all of the conditions that led to what's making me grateful. And then I send metta to all those beings that bring gratitude to me. So the gratitude practice is sort of integrated deeply with the metta practice. It's almost like the catalyst for my metta is gratitude.
Yeah, beautiful. And, if we were to do a week together, we would bring in gratitude practice. We'd bring in some of the other heart practices, because this is really, I'm focusing on metta, but we could equally well focus on compassion or joy, equanimity, gratitude, bring in forgiveness and so forth. That is, these are really the different ways that we open up the heart. And I was also thinking, Patty, of the fact that we also, along the way we bring the metta, and we can really feel this in the radiating metta that goes out in space. We bring the metta to all beings, and this is not just human beings, but all beings. And we recognize that a lot of beings are not treated well, of all sorts. Humans not treated well, non-humans very, very commonly not treated well, and so forth. So it's that can be a kind of a purification practice. And so, just finding, I think, as you're suggesting, Patty, finding what opens the heart. And in a way, again, if we were to do this in a really thorough way, we'd bring in these other practices and see how they integrate with metta. Yeah. Please, Nancy.
I just want to share my own experience of the metta retreat. I had a judgment that the metta retreat wasn't as deep or as powerful or as important as the other retreats. So I did everything else I could find first. And finally, I thought, okay, I'll do the metta retreat. And it was one of the most powerful retreats I've ever done. There was a lot of purification that happened for me in that retreat. But it was just, what you said just so corroborates my own experience. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to weave it more into my mindfulness practice. But it's just been really powerful and helpful.
Right. So it sounds like, Nancy, you're really having, you're experiencing something like that integration of the the metta and the mindfulness.
Yes,
Yeah. Could you say a little bit about what that's like for you or what the experience feels like?
I forget and then I remember. The thing you talked about bringing kindness into situations. Somebody hit me in their car and hit me hard, so it threw me forward. And my immediate reaction was concern for the person who hit me. And when I was talking to the insurance person over the phone, I didn't think anything about it, but she mentioned it. Like, I guess a lot of times people get angry and they have that reaction, but I could see that she had gone forward too, and I was worried about her. So anyway, that's just a tiny vignette, but I do what I can to remember to bring kindness to situations. And I forget if it's a difficult situation. I just recently forgot. But anyway, I practice with it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It sounds important. It'd be great to even share more, hear more. Yeah, you've been doing this and Patty's been doing this and Jen, please.
I'm using a slightly different word, perhaps. I can send well-being. I can't send love. It's just too difficult. And then the second thing I wanted to say was, I liked your idea, and I've heard Ajahn Brahm say it. You get the motor going. You think of something that is easy, because ascending metta to myself doesn't get my motor going. It just, sorry, but I have people around me that I can wish well-being to. And then
Yeah,
as
that's
radio.
right. Yeah. Anything more, Jan?
Oh, no, I was just saying, and then once it's going, then I can radiate once it's chugging along.
Yeah, that's and if if for those of us who haven't had a regular metta practice, if you do want to for the next week practice, 10 minutes a day, the suggestion is to practice where it flows most easily. As Jan was saying, you want to get the motor going where it's easiest and find to stay with that the whole time. Yeah. Thank you, Jan.
Thank you.
Liz and then Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
I don't remember in the early days of my training at Spirit Rock 20, 25 years ago, people talking about compassion.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, maybe 15 years ago, I remember talk about Tibetan practice. Was compassion more evident in the Tibetan practice, and is that where it came from?
Let's see, like I said, in some of the Mahayana traditions, the integration of wisdom and the kind heart is more central. You have the integration, particularly of emptiness and compassion. These are actually the traditions coming out of India in the Mahayana, which are the teachings which go directly to.
So
So Padmasambhava has a line which goes something like that. I was going to give a line and then you can then do your follow-up question. But Padmasambhava says, my view is as vast as the sky and my attention, and I also attend to detail, or I attend to, and my compassion is as detailed as a barley seed. That's a rough paraphrase, but he's basically saying, I integrate the wisdom, the vast view, with compassion. Yeah, and so that gets transmitted to the Tibetan tradition, but the compassion's right there in the Brahmavihara. It's just not, you know, I mean, you can look to all the fundamental teachings from the Buddha, and compassion isn't, it's there in the Brahmavihara, but otherwise it doesn't seem to be very highlighted, right? It's not there in any explicit way in the Noble Eightfold Path or the Seven Factors of Awakening or most of the other teachings, which is interesting to me. But it is there in the Brahmavihara, sort of the four qualities of the liberated heart. Yeah.
I also want to say that the first time I heard any teacher talking about integrating the heart warmth with mindfulness, I heard it from Rick Hansen. When he always says, have a feeling of warmth as you're doing the breathing. That's the first time I heard it in the last couple of weeks from him.
That's great, yeah.
And I've been practicing that way, but I'd never heard it before. So there was an integration through him.
Yeah. No, that's nice that he's saying that. And Sylvia, like I say, when we our approach in the Metta retreat for the last 20, 25 years has been to really emphasize that mindfulness and metta are not fundamentally different. You know, that we need mindfulness to do metta. You need to know when your minds become distracted and come back, right?
Well, isn't in Buddhist practice, mind is also heart, right? It's mind-heart.
Yeah,
is that correct?
The word citta, which is often translated as mind, I think not very adequately. The word citta, C-I-T-T-A, really we better translated as mind and heart. Because they're, you know, in the Pali and Sanskrit languages, they divide up experience differently than Western languages. Western languages generally have mind or thought, emotion, and body, whereas the Buddhist languages have essentially thought and emotion aren't distinguished. In fact, there's actually no word for emotion in Pali or Sanskrit. That translates as emotion. Interesting, right?
And one more thing is, recently I heard this, and it may have been around for a long time, but I had never noticed it before, that when you're practicing sending metta to someone, that person sends it back to you at the same. You say it as you're visualizing it, and then it comes right back to you from that person.
You heard that from someone?
Yes, in the last couple of months. I'd never heard it before.
Yeah, that's not a traditional way of practicing, but we have a lot of different techniques, and actually in the Metta retreats we give a lot of room for creativity.
Yeah, well, I heard this from it was from an experienced teacher. I just can't remember who it was.
Yeah, it can really be helpful. Yeah, I think let's go. Bill, do we have time for just taking two more people, and I'll try to have two fairly quick responses? Does that work for you? Just one? Okay, let's go with Mary. Yeah.
So mine's pretty quick. One of the things I just recall is just the early teachings with Philip. He had talked about the two wings of the Dharma, you know, and that you have to have balance. And I remember Wendy Palmer talking about, if you're going to really practice Vipassana, you better have some loving kindness, because you're going to need that to meet it. And some of the retreats I've been on was like with emptiness and spaciousness. And one of the things I have found is when I am practicing emptiness, when I get out of my way, when I practice not self, that I don't have to do anything, that the metta is there.
Yeah.
Because that is what is in the heart space when you are out of your way. And it's a really, it was just the heart. I mean, the heart opens. It just opens. And it is that felt almost the radiating sense of metta, so that no matter what's going on, It can become compassion. If you're suffering, whatever it is just there. And what I realize is that that is the, it's the natural essence of your chitta, of your heart. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Really a lovely thing. And sometimes we need the reminders like you give us tonight of how to find it.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you. Thank you. That's what the teachings suggest, like the brightly shining quality of mind and heart suggests that it's right there. On the other hand, it can be really helpful to both make the connection sometimes. And then again, we have the social cultural conditioning that splits off the mind and the heart, right? And so sometimes we have to work through that. But I appreciate your saying, like, when you actually go deeper, you find that metta, you know, and that's beautiful. And sometimes, like you say, we need reminders to look or to find it or to develop it. So thank you for that.